You think Michigan, you think water. We touch almost 90% of all the surface freshwater in America. A recent report from Grand Valley State University finds one in every five jobs in Michigan is water-related. In his latest essay for The Next Idea, our partner Jeff DeGraff offers up ideas for protecting and growing our state's blue economy. Jeff, of course, teaches at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan. I love how you put it in your essay, Jeff. We drink the water, play in it, and draw resources from it. We are defined by water. Water is our business.
It certainly is.
That is a good way to put it. And we look at this great resource. And I was really struck with a quote that you had in your essay from a World Bank official who says, quote, "The wars of the next century will be fought over water." You know, with those kinds of predictions and the very early warning signs we're seeing from the drought out west, are we taking our freshwater resources seriously enough, both nationally and in Michigan?
No. And I think the answer is we haven't been for decades. And now all of a sudden we're running into the problem. Our population centers have all moved to the coastlines, particularly to the arid areas of the United States, which had very limited water resources. And, you know, when cause and effect are separated by decades, people kind of think at some point we'll figure this out. Well, you know, the time has come where it's way past the time to figure this out. If you start looking, for example, what's happened in California.
On the fourth year of that drought.
11 trillion gallons short is what they're saying right now.
Wow.
Or look at what happened in the Southeast a couple of years ago, particularly in the Atlanta area. It's very scary.
Well, what kind of potential do you think there is here in Michigan in regards to this blue economy that we could have for Michigan's future?
Well, I think there's kind of a couple of key things right off the bat about the blue economy. The first is protecting the water that we have. I mean, given the legislative environment, I mean, we talk about the Great Lakes Compact and how this is going to protect us, et cetera. But there's a lot of ways around things. And when people get desperate, they do all kinds of desperate things. Look at what the people in Georgia did, trying to get the Tennessee River, right, redrawn, the map of the state redrawn, which is over 100 years old.
They tried to actually redraw state boundaries?
So they wanted to basically put a straw on the Tennessee River so they could get water in Atlanta. They're talking about this now in Washington State and the Great Northwest for California. So the issue is when people get desperate, they do desperate things. So the first thing is we have to double down on protecting what we have. And one of the ways to do that, I think, simply is to start creating a round table of all of these different organizations that protect the water in the Great Lakes and to get them to have a unified voice. And the reason is lobbyists on the other side have a unified voice. They pool their money. Mm. They're focused. So we're going to have to do something in order to protect us that brings these non-government agencies and these government agencies and business as well in the Great Lakes region together. That's the first thing.
Going beyond the Great Lakes Compact.
Yes. And I think the when you start looking at where the votes have moved to, we're kind of on the wrong side of that equation. So we really need all the focus that we can have, because those places that are out of water have more popular votes than we do and more representation in Washington. I think the second thing is using technology and education to really improve how we manage the Great Lakes. You know, there's been enormous breakthroughs in water filtration technology, huge energy efficiencies, huge ways of more environmentally friendly. They're expensive, and they require a very different kind of training. It may mean retrofitting or changing a lot of our utilities. So those two things right off the bat, making sure that other people can't take our water. And the second piece is making sure that we're being very good stewards of 20% of all the drinkable water on planet Earth.
How do we make sure that Michigan is an innovation leader in this?
Well, there's a couple of ways. I think one thing is that it seems to me that there's two big issues here as well. The first is that some things are too large for small businesses to handle. That's the reason that we have government investments in infrastructure. If you think about, they're sometimes called state-owned enterprises, and they're like things like airports that cost a lot of money, or building a highway system, or building a train system. I think it might be time to look at that for water. It might be time to create a very large fund for investing in the infrastructure of water. I'm not talking about little grants. Okay. I'm not talking about, little tiny, endowments that people do. This is not that kind of a thing. This requires an enormous amount of money. And hopefully we can also encourage the states that are out of water to do the same. So for example, California is on the West Coast. It's on the Pacific Ocean, and we have desalinization technologies that are available. The problem and the reason that people aren't going to them is they started about $500 million a plant. Well, you know, if you're considering where your investments go, think about every month, Cynthia. Don't you make a list of what you're going to pay first?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're out of water, I'm thinking water is probably near the top of the list.
Or should be.
Yeah. So the notion is we can develop technologies here to invest in our own infrastructure, but also perhaps to develop industries in this area that can be sold or supported in the desalinization efforts in other parts of the United States.
Now, in your essay, Jeff DeGraff, you mentioned the role utilities can play in developing new technologies. What should be done there, do you think?
I think one of the challenges of utilities is that there's a lot of room for retrofitting and for training people who manage water utilities. And you have to go back and remember that, you know, less than a quarter of a century ago, almost all of the expense for our water utilities came from the federal government, and almost none of it does now. So, you know, there's, again, coming back to what I said about creating the funds for infrastructure, that's the first piece. But the second piece is, what can we do in retrofitting some of these water utilities that we have? And more importantly, can we send people back to university or back to college, if you will, to be certified in water management techniques? I think that would be a really good start to this.
And you touched on this too, but talk a little more about this. You know, we talk about that drought out west. We actually talked to our own Mark Brush from Michigan Radio, who had a post recently that said, at least for the foreseeable future, it'd be way too costly for the West to come for Great Lakes water. Just the logistics, the expense, moving the water up mountains and down. But as you say, future instability and technological innovation, we don't know what's out there, do we?
Well, I also think that's not how that actually works in the real world. In the real world, there's something called offloading. And I don't want to get too complicated mm-hmm. here, but in supply chain management, when you manage a supply chain, you don't just move physical objects. You trade things. So if I want to get titanium, and it really only comes from China, South Africa, and Argentina, if I'm buying it from South Africa, it may be easier to ship it from Argentina. So you make a deal. You trade coming from one place to another. So it's not that anybody's going to build a pipe. It's that what's going to happen is that there are, let's say there's a bottler of soft drinks, and that happens out west. Well, now that gets moved to here. Now, the good news is maybe it creates a few jobs, but the bad news is nickel and dime, or piece by piece, basically you're siphoning off the Great Lakes. And there's a lot of activities right now that are going on like this, and they're being dealt with in sort of an individual state-by-state, case-by-case basis. I think those laws need to be tightened up so that doesn't happen. So I can't imagine the first step would be somebody wants to build a pipe. I imagine the first step is there are these, you know, there's 25% of the water that's in a non-essential industry in, let's say, California. Those things get offloaded back to the upper Midwest, right? So it doesn't look like they're siphoning water. What they're doing is they're creating a small amount of jobs, but what they're really doing is taking a great amount of water for those jobs. And I hope that our legislators are not confused by these kinds of, you know, what we might call mid-office or back-office maneuvers.
What are one or two major barriers that you see right now to this?
I think that there is a challenge that we have this notion of laissez-faire economies as if no rules were really what a laissez-faire economy means, and that's not what it means. What it means is that you identify some key strategic areas that you have unique competencies or unique advantages in, and it means that you try and free up enterprise to basically compete in those areas, not necessarily exploit them, but to basically compete on those advantages that you have. And I think that part of it is ideological. I think the notion that people have is if everybody just kind of does their own things, the Great Lakes will be taken care of. And of course, that's not true. We have a lot of history of that, even in our own state. Remember when the state of Michigan started, there were really three industries that created the state before the automobile industry. The first was timber, and we took 13 billion metric tons of timber out of the state. It's not infinite. You basically cut down all the trees, mm-hmm. and that kind of industry goes away. The second big industry was beaver pelts. This is where John Jacob Astor made all of his money because of the tariff. So he took them over to Canada by way of Belle Isle. So the notion is there were only so many beavers in the state. And then the final thing, of course, was minerals, which came from the Upper Peninsula. So the notion is we've been through this before where everybody doing their own thing didn't really work. We exploited the natural resource. Yeah. So I think what we have to do is pick a strategic target and then encourage free markets to basically, within those boundaries, to compete.
Lots to think about. Jeff DeGraff, our partner in innovation for The Next Idea. And, of course, you'll find his essay with a lot of challenging ideas at the Next Idea page at michiganradio.org. Jeff, thanks so much.
Thanks, Cynthia.